Hello and welcome to the Golden Fusion Podcast, a show where we broadcast the inspiring lives of Central Illinoisans. Today I'm releasing a rather intense episode, and I thought it'd be best not to break the flow of things with any ad breaks. So I'd like to take a moment now to thank this show's incredible sponsors who make all of these interviews possible. You guys are just amazing. Thank you. Fairbury Furniture is the area's premier furniture store, serving Chenoa, Forest, Pontiac, Champaign, Dwight, Bloomington, and surrounding areas since 2004. They've earned countless five-star reviews on Google, GoodBeds, and Facebook for their incredible customer service, fair prices, and the flawless delivery and setup services that they offer. Fairbury Furniture has top-quality sofas, recliners, dressers, beds, mattresses, lamps, entertainment centers, dining sets, coffee tables, desks, and much, much more, while offering beloved brands like Ashley, Sealy, Tempur-Pedic, Best Home Furnishings, and even Leather Italia, that are sure to enrich your home living, which is of high importance these days since we're spending a lot of time at home. For your next furniture purchase, you simply have to go to Fairbury Furniture at 100 West Locust Street in Fairbury. Just a personal note here, I spoke to the owner of Fairbury Furniture just the other day for quite some time. His name is Rick, and he's a great guy who runs a great store. So when it comes time for me to buy some furniture, I know I'm going to be heading to Fairbury Furniture. Let me tell you about a great local place for relaxation and beautification called J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa. This is an amazing establishment. It's staffed with friendly, professional, trained stylists who offer a wide variety of salon services, including haircuts, color services, waxing, lash extensions, manicures, pedicures, acrylic enhancements, and my personal favorite, a wide variety of specialty massages, all at an affordable price. J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa is open Tuesday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. for walk-ins, and then again on those same days from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., but for scheduled appointments only. They're also open on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Take a moment for yourself to relax and enjoy a quality salon and day spa experience at J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa at 204 East Locust Street in Fairbury. You can also shoot them a message on their Facebook page, J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa, which I will include a link to in the show notes below. Come on, treat yourself. You deserve this. Just a side note, I've been here and gotten a deep tissue massage from Joanna herself, and it was magical. So seriously, check this place out. They're professionals who really know what they're doing. Today, I have a very special guest, an Army veteran of the Vietnam War. He served on the front lines and has experienced the horrors of war up close and personally. This man is none other than David Soper of Fairbury, more commonly known as Hawk. This episode is intense and perhaps disturbing to some listeners, but these are the realities of war and our history. George Orwell has said that the most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. Well, these are true stories from one man's experience in the Vietnam conflict. I hope you enjoy. I'm here today with David Soper, more commonly known as Hawk. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on to the show.
You're welcome.
You are more commonly known as Hawk. Why is that? Where'd that nickname come from?
Because when I was a kid, I could see real good at night, and I live right across the street from a cemetery, and I never use flashlights.
Wow. Well, so Hawk, you are a Vietnam War veteran. What did you call the Vietnam War at the time? Because there was never a declaration of war signed on behalf of the United States. It was never officially a war.
Well, the Army told us we had to call it a conflict, and that means that you have to be shot at before you can shoot back. But not everybody worked with that rule, but that's why I think a lot of people died, because they weren't quick on the draw, you know?
So that was kind of the rule set of the Vietnam conflict war, whatever you want to call it, that you were supposed to only fire back or kill or anything like that when you were shot at. I didn't know that.
Yes, and well, I didn't like it either, you know, and most people that went to Vietnam didn't like it either, you know. They thought it was a stupid thing, but, you know, that's your government for you.
Well, so I've heard that you tried two times to go to Vietnam, but it was the third time that you were finally taken. Is that correct?
No. It was the other way around. I went to get drafted, and I failed my physical twice because I had broken my arm twice when I was a kid, and I can't touch my shoulder.
Oh, so you didn't willingly go. You were drafted twice.
And then the third time they sent me, well, they were taking everybody that day, you know. And next thing I know, I'm standing in Fort Leonard, Missouri.
So the first two times they said, well, you can't even lift your arm above your shoulder high enough. They turned you away. But the third time, they're basically taking anyone that could walk, huh?
Absolutely. Well, we lost a lot of people right about that time, so they had to replace everybody.
I see. So the third time, they finally take you, and you're immediately sent to Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri.
Yeah.
So you were there for how long, and what were you doing?
That was just basic training, teaching you how to shoot a gun, but I didn't need to know that. But they teach you all the different, how to take apart a gun, and how mostly you ran and did workouts and jumping jacks and stuff like this, and see if you can live with another 200 people. You know, that's a try. You lose, you have no dignity, you know, when you move in with 200 people. Put it this way, there was double-decker decks, and they had it on both sides of a big building.
You were packed like sardines.
Huh? Yeah, plus your sergeants and your captains and all that, they lived kind of in the middle.
And just to paint a picture for the listeners, how old were you when you were sent to Missouri?
I was 19. Most people went in younger, but I had missed the first three times, or, you know, so I was kind of the older one then.
It's crazy to think that you were one of the oldest ones at 19. I think 19 is very, very young. Wow, they're training you and about to send you off to war. That's pretty wild in my eyes.
Yeah.
Well, so you're there for 6 months, right?
No, 6 weeks.
Oh, 6 weeks. And then you're sent to where?
Individual training. Then they ship me to El Paso, Texas. And when you step off a plane in El Paso, Texas, the heat hits you like a ton of bricks.
It was hot there, huh?
Very hot.
Was it better than Missouri, or was it about the same?
Well, Missouri was colder and cooler, about like here in Illinois. And it was 6:30 at night. Then they told us this is the cool part of the day. And then within maybe 4 hours, you were looking for a jacket because the desert is so cold. It just cools down so rapidly. Then you move on from there, you know, with the scorpions and the tarantulas.
There's tarantulas in El Paso, Texas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And scorpions, yeah. Big time.
I got to tell you, by the way you're describing it, it doesn't sound very fun at all.
It wasn't.
So how long are you in El Paso, Texas for?
I went there for 6 weeks individual training to be an automatic weapons specialist. I learned how to drive the tank, work on the tank, take the tank apart, and put it back together.
So you were basically becoming the tank expert?
Yeah. Automatic weapons expert. That means you know everything about that tank that can be, you know, shoots 240 rounds a minute, runs 60 miles an hour.
A tank goes 60 miles an hour?
Yeah, that had a 500 horse Cadillac motor in it, and this baby would get up and roll. We always like to say we can get out of trouble faster than we got in. And everybody in our group, then, they split us right in half. One half went straight to Vietnam. The other half went to Germany and the United States, and I just happened to get drafted and stay right there and teach the other guys how to run the tanks and clean the tanks. And, you know, most of your time was spent doing maintenance work of all types, how to change the oil and how to do this, and even got a private room for myself, you know.
Sounds a little less stressful than the alternatives.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot nicer. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so eventually this lifestyle living in the United States comes to an end. Well, just tell us what happens. How does this end? How do you get the news that you're no longer going to stay in the U.S.?
I was within months of staying all the whole time in where I was at. And I stayed out late. I had went to Mexico and stayed over there with me and my buddies. So we missed the first two reveilles of the day. Reveille is every morning when the flag goes up. So we had to make the next one. Anyway, so actually that's when the sergeant major comes out to talk. Well, in the meantime, he's coming in, and I'm running with my car, and I run him off the road to turn into the base. And next thing I know, I'm standing in front of him. He says, sign here, and I got a 30-day leave, and hello, Vietnam.
No way. So you were kind of sent to Vietnam almost as punishment.
Oh, yeah. He was going to get rid of me and my car.
So he was sick and tired of you and your buddy showing up late or something?
Yeah, no, my buddy got the same things, all of us, all four of us.
Wow, so he said, sign here.
Yeah, sign here, and we were all gone.
Wow.
End of headache, you know, for him. You know, hello headache for us, you know.
So you had no expectation of going to Vietnam?
At all.
At all.
Well, yeah, I had a real nice job, yeah.
And how soon after he said, sign here,
I went home for 30 days, had a 30-day leave, and then on March 20th, I was sent to Vietnam.
Holy cow, and how old were you?
I was 20 then.
All right, so this is where things get interesting. How did you feel once you started to board that plane that was going to take you to Vietnam? What emotions were you feeling and what thoughts were going through your head?
I went to Chicago to get on a plane, and they have the Canadian plane right beside you, you know, to go to Canada. and so anyway, that was probably the saddest I ever been, besides, you know, the real bad stuff that happened in Vietnam, was when I was flying out of, because I knew I wasn't coming back. And I looked at all the Chicago lights as we were lifting off. And, yeah, that was not, I knew I was in deep, deep trouble, you know.
So when you were, you know, before you went to Vietnam, were you thinking, I think it's noble that America has decided to support South Vietnam against the threat of communism? Or were you like thinking, hey, this isn't our business, maybe we shouldn't be here?
I asked myself that question every day, but you never got an answer from anybody. It's just, hey, shut up and do your job. That's how most people were, you know.
So you're on the plane, and you see those Chicago city lights getting dimmer, getting smaller in the distance. You said it's the saddest you might have ever been. Eventually, you finally get to Vietnam. We're here. You're at Vietnam. You step off the plane onto foreign soil. What are your immediate observations?
We were getting bombed when we got there.
The very area that your plane landed?
The very area.
So it was right into the firefight?
Right into the firefight immediately.
You must have been petrified.
I have no guns. You know, and so they just have us run off, and the pilot, he don't even want to shut down. So the plane's moving as we run off the plane, yeah. And then he's moving back, and they take the plane right inside of a big hangar then.
So what are you thinking? You're stepping off, and you probably hear a lot of shouting, a lot of noise, maybe some guns firing.
Well, I had guys with Jeeps show up, and they got machine guns on them and stuff, you know, and they're there to protect us, and they just tell us to stay there until it gets better. And, well, it didn't get better, you know. And then a couple guys ended up getting hit by the shrapnel and stuff, and we ended up confiscating their guns. And we only had a couple of guns between all of us and a few dead bodies already. So that was my first day in Vietnam.
Your first day in Vietnam. That had to be tough to get to sleep that night.
I don't remember sleeping at all. Oh. I don't remember sleeping. We didn't sleep much in Vietnam.
All right, so you don't go to sleep, but the next day comes. What is that period of time?
They separate you all, and everybody goes to their different spots. And I was with the 5th and 2nd Artillery, so they come and pick me up, me and 5 other guys, and we all end up going to the 5th and 2nd Artillery. And then when I get there, then they separate us. I went to D Company, and the other guys went to A, B, and C. So everybody got one new guy. And everybody knows you're new because you have the brightest, greenest uniform in the building, you know. Anyway, the heat hits you. And all they did is they put a water cooler down in front of me and told me to drink and drink and drink. The humidity is over 100%. And so you're sweating just sitting there. Anyway, they had these little barracks, and I had a little girl there that was cleaning the place. And at that time, I smoked. And anyway, there was these rotten bananas and stuff sitting there. And I was putting out the cigarettes and these rotten bananas and rice. And come to find out, that was her lunch.
Wow.
Yeah, she was not real impressed with me putting my cigarette butts in her rice, you know.
No, what's a gook girl? You said a
gook. That's what the nickname of Vietnamese people are. They call them gooks.
Oh, really? So she was a South Vietnamese person.
Yeah, and she was there as a cleaning lady.
Yeah, on your side as a cleaner, and you put your cigarette out.
Well, I didn't know, you know.
You wouldn't expect anyone.
Well, I just thought it was garbage.
Right. It looked like garbage, but that was her lunch. That's saying something.
Oh, yeah. The little black bananas, you know. I've never ate a black banana in my life since then.
You know, you were the new guy. What were some of the observations you made about the guys that had been there longer?
They didn't have me near them. They had me in a barracks all by myself. Oh, like I said, I was there with that cleaning lady. So for 5 days... That's all I did was drink and get used. Just getting up and go to take a shower and come back from a shower, you were wringing wet from sweat because you just aren't used to it.
So you're here at the barracks, kind of probably a little lonely.
Past lonely, yeah.
So eventually, though, you do meet up with some of your fellow troops.
Then all of a sudden, I could hear the tanks coming in.
After days of being in solitude.
Yeah, you can hear the tanks coming. And they roar on in there. I mean, these tanks make a lot of noise. Yeah, you could hear a mile away, you know, when they're coming. And so then the guy comes in, picks me up, and says, grab your gear and follow me.
That simple, huh?
That simple. A tank, as you can see, it's an open turret tank, so from my chest area up is open. Everybody thinks tank that you're inside. Well, you're inside from the bottom half.
So he basically, more than get in, it's like hop on. For the most part, you're exposed.
All exposed. From here down, it's all steel, and it's angled. And it comes from World War II. The Navy quit using what they call the pom-pom guns in the Navy, and where the bullets go boom, 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 mm-hmm. boom, boom. This baby shoots 240 rounds a minute. Anyway, the tank that I was on would only shoot one round every 8 minutes. So the Navy quit using those. Now they got them all sitting around. Let's put them on these tanks. The other tanks are so slow, and they didn't make it. And he goes, okay, let's put them on there. Send them to Vietnam. And that's how it was.
Wow. So were you were you operating this gun then?
I did it all. Yeah, I was the gunner.
So what's it like then? Are you spending most of your time in this tank, if not all your time for a while?
90% of the time's in the tank.
And what are you doing? Just going, where are you going?
Running convoys. Convoys all day and guard all night. We never got a day off.
I'm sorry. I should know this, but what does convoy mean? You're doing running convoys?
The convoys is where one tank's in the front and the other tank's. So whatever they want, all your food, supplies, whatever, running from one camp to the other camp, moving people, gasoline, oil, you know, mostly food, ammo. And then after you got there, then you would ship up and then it would turn off and leave the convoy. And then we'd go to a base camp that night and set up all night and have guard all night.
So you were mostly transporters of people, of food, of all sorts of things from base to base?
Yes.
And while you're transporting, there's a constant risk of coming under attack.
All the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
So is the terrain there, is it a lot of jungle?
Yeah. Seen Agent Orange, too, how that works.
So you saw Agent Orange?
Well, I was right in it.
So a thing with Agent Orange, and the U.S. got a lot of flack even from its own citizens for using it because it could have significant...
Whoa, but boy, did it work good.
It worked. It killed crops, right? It was a...
Within hours, the grass was laying down. Then that next day, it was brown. The next day, it was sand.
What was that like?
Not fun. Here comes these helicopters, and we just moved into a new base camp. You know, and it's all green, rolled up with bamboo and all this. And so here comes these helicopters, and it was spraying. And it was, you know, just like a light rain. You know, just went over, and they sprayed over it. And, you know, everybody's wanting to see what's going on, you know, going, hey, man, that's pretty cool. And you make berms, you know, where it's like 5 feet up. Everybody's behind that one side of the berm. Well, luckily, I went and took a shower right after that. Some of my other friends didn't. And I went and seen one of them. He lives in Menomora, and he didn't even know who I was. And had all these spots and stuff all over him, you know.
Wow. And the reason people are so angry in the U.S. even about the U.S.'s use of Agent Orange is because it would fall on humans and innocent citizens. And
well, we were breathing it. All of us breathed it, you know. It was impressive, you know, what it did. Next thing you know, all your compounds, instead of walking on grass that we were walking, it turned it into just dirt or sand, whatever you were there.
Very powerful stuff.
Very.
So one day, there's a specific incident I would like to talk about, if you'd be willing to talk about it. One day, when you were going back to a base, back to camp, and your tank, the tank you were on, was leading the way, and eventually you maybe were going too slow, and the tank behind you, because you always traveled in twos, decided it was going to pass you, and just kind of walk me through that.
It wasn't a tank. The other tank, he'll stay right where he's supposed to be, at the rear. Mm-hmm. I was in the front with a tank, and then in between is all these deuce and a half trucks with people in them. Well, it was the dry season. Dry season means dust. Anyway, they got tired of eating my dust, and we were within 2 miles of our base camp. They decided to pass me. No sooner did they get by me than a Vietnamese guy was there with an RPG and hit that deuce and a half truck.
Was this Vietnamese person right off the trail that you were on?
Yeah, he was right off the road. I could see him when I stopped the tank. But anyway, when as soon as they passed us, you know, I can't see because now I got dust. I slowed up just a little bit, you know, to try to get the where I could see the road. And I'm driving the tank, and the deuce and a half is up in the air and coming back down where an RPGs have just ripped through it that was meant for me.
It was meant for
well,
you.
Well, he was getting the first one. Yeah. So if he wouldn't have passed me, that would have been me that he would have shot, and I wouldn't be here talking to you.
So that was the end of most of the people's lives in
that. Oh, yeah. That deuce and a half.
That passed you.
And bodies went everywhere and body parts. You know, it is relentless. You just take a shrapnel going anywhere, you know, just like the towers that went down in New York. There was no bodies to be found. You know, it just rips you apart, you know. So anyway, we ended up shooting the guy that just did that. And then we shot all the way out into the tree line. There was some trucks and stuff out there. Well, you could tell that they were with the VC. And they
VC said for Viet Cong.
Right. And they started shooting at us, and the firefight was on. So we opened up with both barrels on that gun, and then the second tank did the V, as I was talking about. We moved the tree line back a little bit. You
mowed down a lot of trees, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, quickly, yeah.
Quickly.
That tank is relentless on a tree. You want a tree down on the ground, it don't take much. In the meantime, all the traffic's being backed up. Well, we're in the middle of a firefight, so nobody's coming in or going by us, no matter what. You know, if they try, it's not going to be good.
What was running through your head from the moment you saw that truck ahead of you go up into the air from an RPG? What's going through your head? You know you're under attack.
I wasn't thinking. You don't think.
You don't think?
You just react. That's how you're taught. You think afterwards. When it's all done, that's when you think. But anyway, I just turned to the left, and like I said, I'm looking right down this guy's throat. Popped him, you know, and then we moved on from there. And then we could see all the other people start shooting at us, and the rounds are bouncing off the tank at that time.
So do you see people like in the trees?
Oh, yeah.
And you just see what? Muzzle flashes and stuff? And then you
well,
pick
you
them
see
out.
Smoke flashes, and you can see that they always wore black. And you can see the when they're running and moving.
This had to be so frightening.
Well, yeah. Your heart's pumping up all it can. You know, like I said, you're just doing your job, and everybody else is shooting and stuff. And then it slowed down a little bit. And next thing I know, I jumped off that tank to you know, get to the radio, you know, and find out what's in the rear, what they're doing. And anyway, I had left that tank to go to the other tank because we didn't have any communication. And as I was running, some of the guys on the tank said the bullets were just flying behind me. When everything finally calmed down and all the shooting was done, then we had the helicopters come in, and we had to pick up all the body parts and the wounded, load them up on helicopters and send them on out. But anyway, when we went to go to leave.
This is after you had loaded up the helicopter?
And with all the dead bodies and stuff, and we'd taken the guns and stuff, you know, off of them, and the ammo and the water, you know, that was a big thing.
Can I ask, what was that like? Was it traumatizing? I'm sure you can probably remember it vividly.
It was more traumatizing afterwards.
Right. At the time, it's just.
You just did. You don't think, you just do.
You just operate accordingly.
Yeah, just like your job. You just do it. Now all the stress going around you, you still got to do your job. And that night, when you're out there by yourself on guard duty, that's when it hits you, and it hits you like a ton of bricks. I mean, physically break down.
Why is that? Why do you physically break down?
It's emotionally, you know, you're just going, oh, and you relive the whole thing. And when everything's happening, I mean, it is so slow. Then when you're sitting there, like I said, when I went on guard duty that night, And then all of a sudden, all this stuff hits you. And you're just going, oh. And the death. And then the smell.
The smell of the bodies?
Yeah, and the gasoline and the smell of all the gunpowder, the explosives, and then the fires that came with it, you know. All of this comes in, and it comes over you like a wave. And, you know, it's hard to explain, but it's... Yeah, and then after that, it changed how I slept, how I did everything after that. And I never went anywhere in Vietnam without a gun. And then after that, you know, everybody wanted us because we were combat veterans now.
Everyone wanted you. What do you mean by that?
They wanted us in their camps because, well, we had one guy actually physically break down and he could not do his job after that. Actually, he was a hindrance to us because he was one of these John Wayne type of guys. Well, he was John Wayne after it was all over with again. But in between, he didn't do his job, and he was a hindrance, and so we just kicked him right off the tank. You know, we loaded him up on a helicopter and sent him right in with the dead people and the wounded because he was going to get us killed.
What was he doing? Was he just like kind of losing his mind?
He just went to pieces and just fell apart and was in the way. And so we just physically threw him right off the tank. And one guy, you know, he was a week later, he was still just shaking. You know, we had no replacements for people. We had people get killed too. Then we had to go get clerks. We even got a cook as a replacement. Well, these guys knew nothing about the guns.
You were taking anyone available.
Well, we had to have bodies.
You were awarded the Bronze Star, which is a very honorable award. And the Bronze Star is given to those who distinguish themselves as heroic, meritorious, and other things like that. And you got one. Am I correct in saying it was for loading up the wounded on the helicopter?
Yeah, but it was the Bronze Star with a V.
The Bronze Star with a V. What does that?
You can see the V in the thing. That means for valor. A lot of people get a Bronze Star, and then there's a Bronze Star with a V, and then after that, then it's a Silver Star.
What does the V mean? The valor, what does that signify?
It just means for valor, for doing your job. Like the letter says, above and beyond the call of duty type of thing, you know.
You sound very humble about it.
It's humbling to be there. I've been around a lot of guys with different medals, and same thing as when I got home. I didn't talk about it. I talk about it more now than I ever did. As a matter of fact, there was times after I got home, I went to work, you know, and I like to take off on Veterans Day of all days. Mm. You know, that's... You'll have to wait.
Take your time. You're all right.
Let's take a break.
Yo, sure. Sure thing. Yeah. Sure thing.
The memories of war are often nearly as painful as the moments themselves. It's said that he who sees war never stops seeing it. And that is the case for many veterans. Veterans including Mr. David Soper. We took a brief intermission here and eventually continued with an incredible story, beginning with David playing hacky sack for his first and maybe his last time.
With the Thailanders, you know, it was interesting. I never played hacky sack before. I seen it and I thought, well, this looks like fun, you know. And so we're all doing this hacky sack thing. Well, we weren't very good at it compared to these guys, you know. But, you know, it was fun. And a mortar dropped right in that circle.
You're kidding me.
No.
Right in the middle of the fun?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was kind of off center. It wasn't quite there. Mm-hmm. But I wish I would have took a picture of that. We all had shower shoes on. I don't know if you know what shower shoes are. The little thong thing that goes between your... Yeah, well, all the shoes were there. And this mortar dropped in, but it was a dud. And it didn't go off.
Whoa.
Yeah, but all these shower shoes and this mortar were sitting there, and everybody was gone. Boom. You know, just like ants. You got a bunch of ants, you stick your thing there, they're all gone away from you. That was us.
So what was it, a big shell? Is that what a mortar looks
like?
It
was a mortar shell.
Hits the ground, doesn't explode?
Mm-hmm. So then, after we finally calmed ourselves down and got our heart rate back, we just turned the barrel around, and then we bore sighted on that shell. And everybody took cover, and we just blew it.
So this mortar was just a close call, a terrifying close call. You had a lot of close calls, really. I mean, there's probably a lot of chances that you could have died. No.
Well, yeah, every day, you know, that was always in the back of your mind. There's a trust thing there. You know, people that have never been in the service don't even have the slightest idea of that trust. If you don't trust each other, then you ship him out. We had to do it a couple times. And then you live in close. This garage is bigger than where I lived at. See that little square right there?
Mm-hmm.
That's the size of that tank.
Wow.
And we had five of us inside there.
That's unbearable. That's smaller than a dorm room, and you have five men in there, and it's not even a room. It's a tank.
Yeah. And with guns.
And you slept in the tank and stuff?
Oh, yeah. A lot of times. But the other times, we would go outside if the weather was nice and sleep outside. I remember somebody once told me, said, oh, man, I never could find a nice mattress to sleep on. I goes, I was there for over a year, and I never slept on a mattress once.
Wow. What do you have now, a Tempur-Pedic or something?
I got an airbed, one of them pump-up things.
Oh. Well, so, you know, listening to your experience here in Vietnam, it sounds like hell to me. It sounds awful. Man,
well,
I couldn't.
Especially at night.
Especially at night, let alone if it's foggy or raining.
Mm.
My goodness. Mentally, you must have been exhausted. I mean, you were always on guard. You're worried and traumatized. I mean, eventually, though, you do. Your time in Vietnam ends.
Good thing.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd leave with 2 feet.
Right.
You know.
So how'd that go? How'd you get word that it was your time to get out of there?
Well, I was there, and everybody had a calendar. It's called a short-timer's calendar. So when you go there, everybody knows you're going to spend 365 days. So you mark them off every day until you get down to 365.
Everyone who went to Vietnam basically served 365 days and then went home?
Yep, and then they went home.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
When I got my orders, I got busted after I got drunk, went down to the local place to drink.
This is right after you got word that
I was going home, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they took me out in front of the company the next day, and as I shot up the joint, I started shooting cockroaches off the walls, you know, because I drank too much.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is in Vietnam still?
Oh, yeah.
And where'd you go drink? Was it some base?
Right outside that camp, villagers would have booze and they have picnic tables set up.
I see.
We're all sitting around, and I started, well, me and another guy, I bet I could hit that.
Oh, my God.
Let's see. You know, well, that's kind of scared the hell out of all the rest of them.
Uh-huh.
Here's a couple of drunk guys shooting 45s off inside of a building, you know. And, well, they took me down. Next morning, they busted me. And he goes, here you are. You ended up with a Bronze Star, and then you go do something stupid like this. He says, you're supposed to be
a role model, an example.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So anyway, after that, that's when I was on the way home. Then I went back to the main base camp where the bananas were then to muster out. But on the way out, I got bit by a dog. And I turned...
Just a random dog?
Everybody had a dog for guard duty. We used that monkey I told you about for guard. But anyway, I shot that thing and I ended up getting rabies. So I had to spend another 30 days.
You got rabies?
Oh, yeah.
From this dog? Yeah. My goodness.
I was on the plane.
Right when you were about to leave?
Yeah. I went there, did all my stuff, got on the plane, and they coming in, and goes, I'd shot the thing, and I just left.
You shot the dog.
Well, he bit me.
Yeah, of course, right.
Well, I ain't taking this. Boom. No big deal. You know, some of them cooks will eat it, you know. Anyway, they took it in and found out it. So I had to take 21 shots around your belly button.
Mm-hmm.
And the first four are real easy, you know. And then after that, I could not get up. So I did it. I had to take a shot a day for 21 days before they let me go home.
Oh, I bet you were not happy about that.
No, I was not. Another 21 days I had to spend there. And then finally I got to come home.
All right.
And then they just strip you. You lived with the gun. You died with the gun, you know. And then all of a sudden you're coming home. They take away your gun. They strip you naked and take you in and get every kind of disease known to man off of you. And then they throw you on a plane and send you to California. And then they give you a brand new uniform. Then you go through all your tests to get out and stuff like that. And that's when I found out I had a hearing loss from all the big guns in Vietnam and stuff. And as you see, I got two hearing aids these days. Anyway, when I got on the plane in California, the stewardess told me to take off my jacket.
Your army jacket?
Yeah, my brand new army jacket. You know, I went, what? I had, you know, all your fancy stuff on.
Jesus. Including the Bronze Star, right?
Oh, yeah. And they ushered me to the back of the plane, told me to take off my uniform. She says, I don't want an uprising
She thought everyone was going to get mad. This could cause
get mad
uprising.
At me and start a fight with me. She goes, just wear your shirt. And she says, don't talk about anything in the service. I goes, what's going on? She goes, well, she says, you know, that's how it is.
So did you not know how hostile
No. Well, I've been in the service. I didn't know what was going on back here.
And why should you expect your fellow Americans to hate you when you're you're just doing your job and you're doing what the government is telling you?
Yeah. And then I got back here and I got on a bus. And they did the same thing in the bus, and that was to go to Pontiac, where they dumped me off.
When troops came home from World War II, they were met with parades and congratulations.
Yeah, there was no parades for us.
Quite the opposite for you.
Yeah, and I'll never forget, I was in the Eastland Mall one time, and somebody came up and told me thanks for my service. I had an army hat on.
Was this right when you got home?
No, this was way later. Way after I got home.
Like years and years?
Yeah. And I was so shocked, I didn't even tell him thank you. Nobody had ever said it to me. Nobody ever said, hey, welcome home, Dave.
Thanks for your service, Dave.
Never even got it from my own family.
No way.
But they just act like it never happened.
This war happened in the age, kind of the dawn of the media. You know, they had coverage of, you know, video from the war on TV, and it was subject to opinions from the media people. And, I mean, there was a Kent State protest that resulted in four students being shot. It was a crazy time, and
I just left a crazy time. Then all of a sudden you're on your own again. And then after that, I ended up joining the union and went to work. So what else you want to know?
Well, it was unfortunate, you know, you were wrongly criminalized alongside of a lot of other Vietnam veterans.
It's different now. We went on vacations and people from out of just Joe Blow, hey, thanks for your service. Way, way different.
So people have become more understanding and thankful.
Oh, big time. Big time.
But at the time?
At the time, yeah. I was an operating engineer and went to different jobs all the time. You know, war, army stuff. I was the only veteran in the whole company. You know, none of them understood it, didn't want to know about it. you know. And then when they found out that I was, you know, then they went, "Oh, you're one of them killers."
No way.
Oh yeah.
The nerve they had to have to say something like that.
It changes you.
What did that feel like to hear that from them?
Like I said, you just learn not to talk about it. You just kept it to yourself. You know, that's why I guess I talk about it more now than I ever did.
What advice would you have, or what do you want to say to people about how they treat veterans?
Well, what really gets me is when we're putting them in the ground and we don't have enough people to shoot the guns. We have to get together with the Legion, and here a while back we had to get with another town to get enough people to bury a guy. So we started off in Chatsworth, got Chatsworth Legion, and then we picked up the Legion here in Fairbury, and then we picked up the VFW in Fairbury, and we went to Shenandoah and got to have all that done in Shenandoah. It's getting to the point where we're losing our veterans at a rapid rate, but nobody's giving them the send-off that they need with the folding of the flag and the playing of the taps, the last goodbye. You know.
And that's something that you wish people
would do more of. Yeah. We need the help. They should take the time out of their busy schedule to... Who's going to be there for them?
Right.
When it's my turn, I hope more than two people show up. Maybe we have to pay them to come.
Well, Hawk, we are getting close to the end of this episode. Is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
Well, you see a veteran, tell him thank you. Bottom line.
Bottom line.
No, he earned it. We gave years of your life to the service. That's a commitment. Some gave all gave some. And to carry your friend off after a battle is not fun. And then to clean up after that is even worse.
Least we can do is thank these people that sacrificed so much for us.
And I still live with it every day. And some days are good.
Well, on behalf of so many, you know, I'm so sorry for the things that you had to sacrifice, the horrible things you had to live through. But I thank you, and so many of us thank you from the bottom of our hearts for the sacrifices you made for this country, for the well-being of another, and for the well-being of so many people. Thank you for your service.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for coming on to this episode, sir. It means an awful lot to me.
Yeah.
I think people are really going to appreciate this one.
Hope somebody thanks a veteran somewhere.
I hope so, too. Yeah. I know I sure will. And all great things must come to an end. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or any social media platform. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can head over to thegoldinfusionpodcast.com and donate as little as $1 if you'd like. You can also purchase an official podcast mug. If you're a small business who wants to have your business advertised in this podcast, again, just head over to thegoldinfusionpodcast.com and drop us a line in the ad spot section at the bottom of the homepage. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gold Infusion Podcast. God bless and have a great week.